ultimately our goal with, you know, having them use online platforms is so that it can better facilitate the in-person experiences when they are able to have them.
I think it's worth just talking about some core practices that allow us to break from the hypnotism.
What does it mean to be present in the real world? Having real world experiences is something that we are extremely passionate about. Hello and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
Now, Jonathan, one of the things that listeners may have heard us mention a few different times on the podcast is something called Thursday nights. And I think that is something that for those who are in the Unbound community, particularly here in the Virginia area, is something that is I almost want to say legendary, but I think it's more just like a staple of the lives of those who are kind of in this community. And Jonathan, for those who haven't actually experienced it fully, can you kind of give us a little bit of a picture of what that is and what it actually looks like? Because it's really important, I think, not only to us who are here, but also just kind of some of the ethos of what we do at Unbound, actually.
So, David, we might tell the full story of Thursday nights on another episode, but the short story is that it wasn't something we planned, and make sure we don't ever get credit for it. It was a series of fortuitous accidents that were God ordained and not something that we thought up. But the short of it is that we host folks at our house on Thursday nights from 6:30 until whenever, which often goes way into the evening. And somebody asked me one time, what's it like at a Thursday night? And I kind of looked around because they were on the phone and I was at a Thursday night. And I was like, well, there's a group of people in the living room talking to my wife about various things. And there's a bunch of little kids running around out there. There's a group of folks sitting at the table playing poker, which, to be clear, not for money, but for a spreadsheet that they're really excited about. And they're very animated about it. There's a deep theological discussion in the kitchen. I don't know why the theological discussions are always in the kitchen. Everybody's always sitting on the floor out there below the counters, and they're deep into it. There's a group of people down at the river. There's at least seven guys in the parking lot changing a radiator in a truck. And the last I checked, there were four guys having a boxing match in the front yard. And they said, is that typical? And I said, yeah, kind of so, in terms of going on. And the point there, David, is that to me, I'm always struck by just the sheer variety of things that happen. And I always kind of laugh and think at one point, people thought that we wouldn't gather like this. We'd do everything online. And it just boggles the mind to think that kind of variety of interaction or that creativity, if you want to call it that, could happen in an online setting. It's something about being physically present. And that brings us kind of to the question that you were looking at, David. So what is that question that we were considering for this episode?
Well, for one thing, I would just like to note that I can confirm that you will pretty much never know exactly what is going to be happening on a Thursday night. There have been so many times where I have come and I have gotten pulled into some sort of very physical game. I've gotten pulled into a deep discussion, or there's been times where there's just been a few of us that will just like sit in a corner and just be reading books and will occasionally just comment to each other about what we're seeing in the books. And you never know what exactly is going to happen there. And so it's a great time. But I think that we were talking about significance of the in-person interaction that we were getting there. And so we were thinking of tackling the question, what does it mean to be present in the real world? And now the tongue-in-cheek way to phrase this, to borrow the more modern phraseology that Jonathan, you proposed, was what does it mean to touch grass? So I think that's been a more recent rephrasing of that. But I think that this overall, just like having real world experiences, is something that obviously, if you have listened to us talk about Unbound at all, is something that we are extremely passionate about. And so we're not going to have any problem talking about this for the rest of the episode. But in general, even regardless of whether you are a young person or not, I think it is becoming an increasingly valuable thing to seek out intentionally opportunities to interact with the world outside of a digital medium. And I say intentionally specifically because it's no longer something that we can just assume that everyone is going to do to some extent, because there are just more and more opportunities and incentives to center your life around not interacting with the real world and instead doing everything through a digital medium. So
I think that it's worth, you know, we told that story about Thursday nights because the sheer variety of things happening there. And I don't think any of them were planned. In other words, nobody came to Thursday night saying we're going to have a theological discussion about this. Nobody came to Thursday night saying that we're going to sit down with Kara and talk about this. Nobody came to Thursday night and said, you know, sometimes they come to play games, but the variety of games are, you know, it happened to be poker that night. It could be something else. You know, I don't know who got the idea to buy two sets of boxing gloves and try those out. You know? And that was a fairly, you know, common thing for about 6 weeks, and then it wore off quickly. And then, you know, somebody was there saying, hey, you know, the week before, I need the radiator in my truck swapped. And a couple people said, well, bring it next week and we'll do it. I mean, those were all not particularly pre-planned activities. And so there is a variety, a diversity, a richness, a tapestry of those interactions that it's laughable to think that, oh, we would have gotten a Zoom meeting and had some sort of equivalent experience. But here's the part, David, that I think is really worth noting. That's true. And yet increasingly people are, you know, abandoning Thursday nights, whatever the activity looks like. And they're increasingly zoned into a flat, one-dimensional, not real version of life. AI is exacerbating this. The internet's already created it. There's a, you know, death by entertainment type of thing. And so I think it's worth just talking about some core practices that allow us to break from the hypnotism. I mean, that's what it feels like to be hypnotized. And I say that not as a self-righteous, like, oh, you zombies over there. I say that as somebody, and I've talked about this before, who is sort of stunned at how hard I have to work to break a YouTube addiction that always comes under the guise of, well, I'm just too tired. I'm going to watch a video or two. And then I'm like, what am I doing? I mean, like in my case, it is sucking time away from a fantastic family. I'm not fleeing the family. It's a rich, wonderful place to be. And yet if I'm not constantly sort of battling against the temptation, I little by little abandon them for a series of experiences I'm not having. And I'm somebody who didn't grow up watching television. Maybe that's why I'm particularly susceptible to this particular addiction. And so there's a need for maybe some discipline here, but also maybe for some categories. What are the things that we can do that kind of help us guard against the hypnotism? David, you had a list of things that you know, think are particularly powerful in terms of, you know, practice these regularly. And it's at least a good bulwark against being sucked into the hypnotic, you know, technology, flat screen, zombie-like existence.
Well, for one thing, I think just to set up this conversation even better is that I think one of the most important things that we can do is just the mindset that we approach it with, that I don't think this is a new thought, but I think that it's a thought worth repeating because of how significant it is that technology is a tool, and, you know, using digital devices and, you know, the internet is meant to be in its right place, a tool that allows you to get things done, that allows you to, you know, in our case, we work remote, and, you know, Unbound would not be possible without the internet. And so it is a wonderful tool that allows us to not only, you know, in Jonathan and I's case, work and provide for our families, but also to provide an amazing experience for our students. And ultimately, our goal with, you know, having them use online platforms is so that it can better facilitate the in-person experiences when they are able to have them, not only when they're all able to come together, but then when they are done and they close their laptops so that they can then go back out into their real-world lives and be more effective in the ways that they're doing that. And so that is, I think, the most helpful healthy way to view that. It's easy to agree with that. It's hard to put that into practice in day-to-day life because of how many incentives that we have that are created to just keep us coming back to these experiences, to our devices, for things that are not nearly as productive, that are not the tools that are ultimately serving the higher purposes that we're looking for. So this is a list that I stole from an article that was released. The author's name was Ben Sass. Jonathan, did I get that name correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so I got this list from an article by an author named Ben Sass, who was talking a little bit more in the context of family, but I think regardless of whether you're a parent or a student, I think that these are some principles that you would find helpful in terms of trying to ensure that you are living well and being present in the real world, even in an increasingly digital age. And so there are four elements to that. There is reading, taking digital Sabbaths, taking a break from digital devices, but I think we could also just expand that to taking Sabbaths, period. There is physical labor, and then there is travel, and travel not just in the sense of going on vacation, but just traveling to some place that is not your familiar home, and just seeing what life is like in places that are different, and just seeing different sides of human experience. So that's kind of the list of things that he proposes. And I, for one, think that there is some very good value in each of those practices. So, Jonathan, I'm curious to get your initial reaction to that.
I think that's a fantastic list. Ben Sass is somebody worth paying attention to at all times. And he has he's battling a terminal illness right now. And so these are words that are worth measuring and paying attention to. Not to take away from Sass's list, but I might add one, which is to create a discipline of live interaction. And that's kind of one of those funny things that you have to say, like, is that even really necessary? But of course, David and I do work remote. I mean, it would theoretically mm-hmm. be possible for us to spend the week and not see somebody in person. And I was thinking about how to categorize that. And I'd like to suggest it in two ways, speaking from the experience of my own life. One is, this won't surprise anybody listening to this podcast, but the non-negotiable would be, as part of that Sabbath, attend a Bible-believing church. And I don't think that those are negotiables from the Christian life. But I also want to state that I can't think of anything more beneficial I could tell you to do. To take a Sabbath to rest, to observe that discipline, and to include in that Sabbath a time of corporate worship. I'm not buying any of your arguments about the fantastic preaching you can get off of YouTube. There is great preaching on YouTube, and there's lots of good things to listen to there, and I'm not taking away from that. That in no way, not even in a small way, replaces the power and the benefit of being present together as a body to worship in whatever form that is mm-hmm. for your denominational practices and location and space. And then the second would be, again, from my own life, from our Thursday night experiences, is to find a regular group, live interaction that is outside of worship. I think that could be anything from getting together to play a sport with friends, to a book club, to something like Thursday night, to just some regular interaction. And I say that as somebody who didn't necessarily have that as a discipline through a chunk of my life. Then, as we noted, somewhat accidentally came into it, but have just been stunned at the benefits that has accrued for myself and my family. Just the regular interaction with people, I can't even begin to describe the opportunities, the insights, the support, the help, the relationships that have been built through that one small discipline of just seeing people regularly live. And to David's point, the internet then creates this powerful tool to connect people, to continue that communication. We communicate with our group that comes on Thursday night through online platforms, and I think that makes it so much easier. I can't imagine Thursday night would look the way it does or would be able to interact the way it does if we had to call each other on a landline phone like it would have been when I was a kid. There's just a lot of opportunities. We literally had activity recently where the night before I was like, oh, I meant to invite everybody to this, come. And the next day, 47 people came. and that wouldn't have been possible without technology. So there's a way that technology enhances those things. But to David's point, is it a tool that enhances? So I would just add to that, but also then state, yeah, this idea of travel, of physical work, and of a Sabbath rest. Those are all kind of core things that help us remember what's real. And strangely enough, for people who are hypnotized, it's necessary to remember what's real. David, you've read the Narnian books, I think. Have you read The Silver Chair?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so The Silver Chair was my least favorite one when I was reading them aloud to my children. I've read them aloud multiple times, and I was just thinking the other day that I'm getting ready to probably have to read them again as my littler ones are getting older.
That's exciting.
But there's that, you know, there's that scene where they're in the chamber, and for those of you who read it, for those of you who don't, I hope this isn't too much of a spoiler, and Puddleglum, one of the characters, has to break free from the hypnotism and has to remember what is real. And it's a powerful scene from the stories aspect of it, but it's an even more powerful scene from a symbolism side of things. And outside of the last battle, I think of that scene so often, David, in terms of our world, that there is a necessity to break free. And there's an intriguing part of that story where Puddleglum has to create some physical pain to be able to fully appreciate reality. Now, I want to be cautious here. I don't want to say something weird. I want to acknowledge that part of physical reality tends to involve some level of physical discomfort. If you take a Sabbath, you are not doing things that you perhaps wanted to do. If you are doing physical work, there is sweat and sore muscles involved in that. If you travel, there is the discomfort of being in a place where you don't understand everything and you're not fully comfortable. And so it's worth noting that there's something incredibly important to understand, that live interaction requires a level of discomfort, but it is the discomfort itself that helps you really see, grasp, and understand reality. And those things are inextricably entwined in a way that I don't fully understand, but I'm as sure of as I'm sure of gravity. And so that's worth observing and noting as you work to not be hypnotized, that the discomfort is not necessarily a flaw. In many ways, it's the feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Discomfort and implementing methods where you are increasingly encountering discomfort, not in a sense where you're seeing discomfort as a good thing in and of itself, but just for the purpose of building yourself up is a really good thing. I do think it's really funny that you use a story from the Narnia books to illustrate this, because I was thinking that that's a great way to talk about like the other element on this list, which is reading. And I think that that's one that on the surface level, you may think, okay, well, like I could read on, you know, an e-reader or something like that. And so I don't feel like that necessarily fits quite well, because like you're sitting there and you're looking at a page, you're not actually experiencing real life. How does that help you to stay present in the real world? I think that it has that benefit in a couple of ways. For one thing, just because of digital tools that are making it easier and easier, especially with AI, to just, disseminate information and to simplify it and to just bring it all together for you in just one simple summarized package. Having the patience to sit and just look through and examine a full idea or a full story in detail, the way that reading a book will force you to, is an excellent practice of patience, for one thing, and also an excellent practice of being able to sift through a wealth of information and be able to gather takeaways from it and gather your thoughts from it, and then be able to take it away and analyze it and say, okay, so based on everything that he said, like, how does that compare to my personal experience? And I think that that can apply in a nonfiction or in a fiction setting. Nonfiction obviously can have great benefits, especially if it's talking about, whether it's theology or business or whatever career field you're in. But I think even fiction can often just from the, if it's a good storyteller that is writing the book, can offer us perspectives and can give us even just frames of reference to express experiences and talk about some of the feelings that maybe we don't quite have the right way to put into words ourselves. But then when we see it represented in a character in a story, especially if it's something that multiple of us have read at the same time, you could go, oh, we all know that feeling. We understand that. And it just helps us to have an even deeper appreciation for those experiences. Not that it's a replacement for going out and having experiences yourself, but it can aid in that as well. And so in what is potentially somewhat of a roundabout way, I think I would argue that reading and sitting with a book is actually one of the best ways to make sure that you can stay present in the real world, in addition to all the other things we've mentioned.
Well, we don't often do this, but I think I want to take this and like actually put a fine point on it and poke you a little bit. So, listener, this is if you don't want to be challenged, this is the time to turn the podcast off. But instead, I want to if you're willing to stick with us, I'd like to issue a direct challenge here. We sometimes are cautious about giving advice, but in this case, I might break our rule and offer advice in the form of a challenge. I think that people that do some of these simple things I'm about to suggest are people who will live a radically different life than most folks in our culture right now. And I think that that will be beneficial for you as the person doing it, but I think this will be incredibly beneficial for your neighbor, meaning that I think this is a good way to love your community, both in terms of modeling it for your friends, for your children, for your parents, for your associates, for, you know, in other words, this is not only beneficial to you, but beneficial to the place and the people that you're around. So here's the simple list. So get ready. The first and the most important, if you do none of these except this one, this is the one to do. Commit to attending regularly a Bible-believing church every Sunday. Make it your rule. Everybody's going to have to skip. There's always going to be exceptions, but make it your base practice that Sunday mornings are a non-negotiable time to worship together collectively in person. And I know finding churches is hard. I know it can be awkward. I know that churches are sometimes difficult. That's actually part of the reason you should do this. But make that the non-negotiable. But then extend that a little bit. Find a time in your week, perhaps Sunday, of at least 4 hours and ideally 12 that you take a digital fast. No screens. But, you know, if you have to start small, start with four. But if you want to, you know, be real, start with 12 or work your way up to 12. But commit to a digital fast and see what that does in terms of breaking the hypnotism. Find a way to connect with people outside of your church. So certainly we start with the church. But along with that, you know, find some other way during the week that you interact with people. And if that's just one person or if that's a group of people, you choose. But make that a discipline like church. You go to church every Sunday and you meet with this friend or participate in this group or do this on a regular basis, whether it's weekly or biweekly or whatever, just on a regular basis. Find a way to be outside. Ideally, this would be work. So maybe it's mowing the grass or something like that, but that's not always possible. So if it's as simple as taking a walk, find a regular way to be outside on a daily basis, even if it's as short as 20 to 30 minutes, find a way to literally touch grass. And finally, make it a daily practice to read, even if it's as simple as one chapter a day. And I would suggest you make that a physical book. And now here's the challenge. We're in the middle of summer, so it's time for, you know, you get flexibility and all those kinds of things. We're recording this close to the beginning of July. Commit to this for a four-week period. Now, for the church thing, we'd ask you to commit for this to the rest of your life. But for the rest of this, give it a 4 to 5 week period here and see if you can practice this discipline and try these things. And then let us know. If you're watching this on YouTube, let us know in the comments. If it's a podcast, email us and contact us and let us know how it went. Or if you're regularly doing these things, let us know how it's benefited your life. But we're going to issue the challenge and see what that does. I think these somewhat simple physical practices can be utterly transformative in terms of the way you live and the way you represent yourself to the rest of the world.
We know it's tough to find the right resources for your high schooler. That's where Equip by Unbound comes in. This program for 9th through 11th graders combines Christian worldview training, coaching, and hands-on projects that help students apply what they're learning in real life. By year's end, they'll have stronger skills, clearer direction, and more confidence for what's ahead. Prices are going up soon, so now's the time. Learn more at beunbound.us/equip. Well, for this week's student feature, we wanted to round out our feature of our student intern podcast team, the students who are helping to make the podcast even better over the course of this summer. And we are very delighted to be able to introduce you all to Bella. Bella is now a graduate of all 3 years of Ascend. And so she has completed that and has been around with us for a long time. And I think that it is safe to say that we are very grateful that she's decided to stick around with us for this long. And so not only has she been a really fun part of the student community, including being the executive for the Unbound student cabinet for this last year's Apex, but has just been able to contribute in some really cool ways. And so welcome, Bella, and thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, David. It's been absolutely lovely. And it's too easy to stick around the Unbound community. Y'all make life so much richer and so much more enjoyable.
Well, in that case, I will cease the introductions. And you and I were talking a little bit beforehand about what we could talk about that you've been learning about recently and how you've just kind of been practically living out some of the things that you have learned in Unbound. And you mentioned that you have recently been picking up a new skill and you've been working towards that. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, yes, I see the mystery. Yes. What is this new skill that I've been learning? So as a recent graduate of Ascend, in the last semester, the little spring semester, the launch class is tasked with finding a new skill or something that they just want to learn, something that's for fun. It can be for more career-oriented things. And it's just, it's a fun way to challenge yourself to do some more internal motivated learning. And I was like, you know what? I want to learn something a bit more creative. I want to do something that I've always wanted to do. So I picked up learning guitar and I got myself the sweetest little acoustic guitar. I named her Diana. She's absolutely gorgeous. She's actually in my background right over here, if you guys can see that. And I will tell you, learning guitar was really rough at first. I've picked up a few key like chords here and there, but I never really stuck with it over the past few years. And so this year was the year I actually committed to learning guitar, and I have genuinely fallen in love with it. It has been one of the most enjoyable, one of the most humbling experiences I've gone through. But also, I consider myself a musician now, because now I actually just play guitar every single day and I can play songs. But I never was just at that point. I had to go through a lot of teaching myself, figuring out how I personally learn guitar. So I really enjoy finger picking, and strumming is something that I still struggle with. But finger picking is the main technique that I really wanted to master and get into. And I would say I finger pick very, very well for a very beginner learner, which is kind of fun figuring out, oh, this is how I learn guitar. Oh my goodness, it's such a beautiful experience, and it's very freeing. I've never had something, a hobby or an interest, that has truly felt so freeing to me. And being able to kind of explore the technique and the other side of music. I love music. I've loved music for the longest time. It's been a huge part of my life. But being able to explore making music and learning how others do it and all the different ways you can play guitar has been, it's been captivating, honestly. I truly love it. It's been a very restful learning experience, which is kind of a really good contrast compared to others. So that's been lovely. And I would just lose myself in learning something new. I had a little guitar book I was going through, and I'd practice this one skill in every single module that he was teaching. And I'm like, wow, this is incredible. And then my mom would come in 2 hours later and be like, hello, we haven't seen you. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, I was playing guitar. And she's like, well, okay, dinner's ready. I'm like, okay.
Wow. Well, that is so cool to hear about, Bella. Thank you for sharing with us just like the process that you've kind of learned through that. And it's cool to see how it's a very practical demonstration of, if you take something that may be hard or uncomfortable at first, but if you're willing to push through it both mentally and physically in this case, then there's some really cool benefits that you can get out of that. So thank you so much for sharing that. And we really appreciate you joining us here on the podcast and joining us on the team that is making the podcast even better week by week. So we are glad to have you featured here. And who knows, may not be the last time.
So, any further thoughts before we close this up, David?
Well, I think just to circle back around to the question that we began at the beginning, which is what does it mean to be present in the real world or to touch grass? I think we've given some great, just like very practical insights into that. But I think really it can be boiled down to looking to make sure that digital spaces and digital tools stay as tools that will facilitate you having real life, real world experiences, and to be intentional about seeking those in just the ways that we outlined. But ultimately, just as long as you're intentional about seeking those, then you're already going to be doing better than 95% of the population right now.
Amen and well said. If these kinds of things resonate with you, and if you're looking for a community of people that tries to do this regularly, check out beunbound.us. For everything else, we would just recommend that you take up this challenge. Let us know how it goes, and we're anxious to hear about it. Until next time, be unbound.